Every week on the Moth Podcast, you'll hear true stories that will intrigue you, inspire you, and make you laugh.
He said, is there anything in your diet that might be spiking your blood sugar? I said, sometimes I eat pizza until I'm unconscious. He said, I think that might be it.
For real stories live on stage from comedians, astronauts, accountants, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another edition of News You Can Use right here on WTIC News Talk 1080. And I'm excited to have on the program today, we're going to talk about some things that are going on at the Capitol and some things that are impacting religion and kind of what the fights are and what the discussions are that are going on at, I call it, the Big House. And with us in studio today is Chris Healy. And Chris is the executive director of the Connecticut Catholic Conference. We was given that position back in December of 2018, and he's been around everywhere. He's a public policy guy, he's a media guy, he's been very involved in grassroots politics, he sits on the school board in his town, and he also served as communications director for the U.S. House of Representatives, and the list goes on and on and on. You should be like 150 years old, Chris.
I am, actually, in dog years.
Well, it's great to have you here, and we always have great conversations, Chris, because we do. And, you know, I saw you up at the Capitol. I was up there earlier this week meeting with a client of mine, and I saw you sitting there, you know, in the bowels of the legislative office building, hard at work. What were you doing?
Like most adults there, we sit in the cafeteria like it's high school, and we try to move the needle a little bit for the good of people of faith, and try to bring facts and passion and clarity to the political debate. And it's a process that is necessary, critical to our republic, but also critical to people that believe in their faith and believe in the tenets of the First Amendment, which is the practice of free religion, which all other of our acts are under the Bill of Rights come from. So that's sort of what I do. It's an honor to do it. It's a pleasure to do it. It is a great responsibility, and I work with great people, and I am honored to represent the people that pay the bills and my bishops, as well as all the people of the Catholic faith.
Well, let me ask you this, because, you know, I am not a lobbyist. Are you a registered lobbyist, right?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm not. And, you know, I hadn't been up there this legislative session, and every time I go over there, my eyes just pop wide open at the process. You've got your people in session, and then you've got these, you know, these red ropes around the outside of the building where people, your lobbyists stand.
It's like a movie theater.
It's like a movie theater, yeah. Whatever you call, what do you call those things? But anyway, so people are just standing there waiting for their representatives to come out, these lobbyists, and so they can say, you know, Senator, can I get a minute? Can I get a minute? And they're, you know, making their pitches in, what, 30 seconds a minute or whatever. It's just such a weird process for me. I mean, I came home last night and I felt like I needed to take a shower.
Well, usually that's because the ventilation system here is so lousy. But I think that what people need to understand is that we're all the average, you know, hardworking Connecticut resident American are very busy. They're trying to provide for their families. If they're retired, they're busy as well. But they have certain responsibilities. We have certain responsibilities as citizens, and it doesn't take much time to get involved. And legislators do listen, believe it or not. Yeah, if they listen, if you get them personally one-on-one, if they get an email, if you make the effort, and if you organize and bring your collective voices to bear, it helps when you can control certain aspects of our society. It helps if, you know, elements of our society that control information are, you know, predisposed to support you without even looking at the facts. But that's what we get paid to do, and we get paid to represent the interests of people that don't have the time in their day to come up to the Capitol and seek redress from their elected officials. I'm going to put a little pitch in here that one thing that has disturbed me is someone who's literally been in that building in some, as my introduction said, you left out some other less favorable jobs I've had. But I've been a creature of that building since 1985. I started as a newspaper reporter, and then I was a staffer, and then I've obviously been in elective, politics and grassroots and lobbying for different organizations and clients. And the thing about the building is that it has always been open to the public, and the legislators have always been accessible most of the time, whether they're in the building during committee meetings, during office hours, or during the legislative session. And sadly, they still can operate now by remote control. In other words, they can vote in their offices, in their phone, in their cars, under the old COVID restrictions. And the last time I checked, officially, the COVID pandemic is over. It's been over for a while.
Yeah, so get your butt in the building.
It's officially been over by the federal government.
Right.
I was told, just happenstance, I had to go see a friend in the Haven, and even they have lifted the mask mandates. Now, I would argue sometimes there's a good reason to wear a mask in a hospital under any circumstances, but you don't have to.
Mm-hmm.
So, unfortunately, both parties, a lot of members, still use this as a way not to be as accessible as they could be. That's a big disappointment. But then again, it requires people like the Catholic Conference and other organizations to mobilize the general public to reach out and find these legislators to get things, get their point across and engage in the proper debate. The obvious way to, square this up is an election, but the process of making laws is tedious. A lot of it's done through private meetings. Sometimes amendments pop up at the last minute, and that's why lobbyists are paid to pay attention to that. And I'm not saying it's unfair or whatever, it's just the process.
But
it makes it a little bit more challenging, and I think it's unnecessary for these rules to still be in effect that allow legislators literally to phone it in.
Yep.
And I don't think that's fair under any circumstances. And if a legislator wants to wear a mask on the floor or wants to wear a mask in their car or whatever, that's fine. But if you can't show up, then maybe you should think about getting out.
That's a problem. You know, and I noticed a sense of panic because the session's down to its final days and a lot of people are, trying to get their stuff in there and get their amendments in there and bills are getting killed and blah, blah, blah. But you represented, as you mentioned, the Archdiocese, and you were very vocal. Your organization was very vocal on the assisted suicide bill, which you said you got it killed. So explain to people what that means.
I hate using that term, especially with something like assisted suicide.
I know.
But
well,
what the issue is,
kill the bill,
simple.
Right?
Right. So assisted suicide has been an issue now for almost 13 years. The proponents of it have basically filed the same bill over and over again. And what it would do is it basically allow certain physicians, to prescribe a lethal drug to end someone's life. The parameters of getting that are very weak and very slippery. Now, obviously, in Catholic theology, and we don't believe suicide. Suicide is seen as a sin, but we are here to promote life and to protect life at all stages, from natural conception to natural end, and to certainly not empower the state to take it. That's why we're against capital punishment as well. This bill was able to find its way out of the Public Health Committee. That's an irony of itself, but that was the reality. And during the process, it had to go to another committee, the Judiciary Committee. And luckily, the members of that committee were open to the arguments that not only the church made, but a broad coalition of people from the disabled community, hospice workers, veterans groups, people that understood that while we are more than sympathetic and caring, in fact, Catholic hospitals and Catholic charities provide a lot of assistance to people who suffer from a variety of mental and physical maladies, that suicide is not an answer to anything, and that the issue of pain and suffering is not an issue with the various methods we have now through hospice and palliative care, which is where we should be investing more, and as well in mental health for people who seek this for simply reasons of despondency, loneliness, the fact that life is not what it used to be. These are the reasons cited in other states that have assisted suicide in the books, particularly Oregon, where 80% of the people that apply for it have nothing to do with pain. So we made those arguments. We also made the argument that we have we talked about this before we went on, a suicide contagion in this country, particularly among young women, young girls, and that we cannot, as a society, then make it legally and morally acceptable for this option. Because once you put that into the culture, it creates more problems, and that we are better people than to take a express lane to suicide and to go down a path like that. So we were lucky, and we worked hard with a lot of people, and there were a lot of people in the Judiciary Committee who were extremely thoughtful and decided not to pursue the bill this year. But we have no illusions that it won't come back next year, and on and on and on it goes.
But. Right, but you know, you talk to the other side, which I have talked to the other side, that were proponents of this bill. You know, there are a lot of people out there that are suffering, that have terminal illnesses, that are in pain, their quality of life. I'll use my neighbor as an example. She's, you know, in her probably early 60s, severe dementia, dwindling down to nothing, doesn't know who anybody is, and, you know, and what kind of quality of life is that? So her husband's her caregiver, and we, you know, people say you need to put her somewhere. No, till death do us part. Well, death do us part happened because he passed away, and I think part of that was the reason for being a caregiver for somebody like that. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, I'm a good Catholic person. I know what I've studied. I know what my beliefs are. But you know what? If I got to that point, I think I would want that option. Because, you know, you can do the chemo and radiation, you can do all those things, but, you know, I don't want to, I always say to people, if I get like that, not that example, but other examples, if I get to be like that, let me go.
I think that's I certainly understand that point of view, and I think everybody that's had that type of loss is legit. It's a legitimate feeling to go forward. Our argument is that, well, you know, that's life. You know, that once you start making or put the state involved in this, and that's what the other problem is. Once the state gets involved in this, and once you let this out of the bag, then the issues that you talk about almost become secondary. It becomes an express lane for people that have other options. And yes, there are circumstances where people would say that, but you have to kind of look at the collective overall aspect of our culture. I mean, are we a society, this society, this American society, that was founded on life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, but it starts with life, and to protect it at all costs. And sometimes we run into situations that seem, you know, hopeless and full of fear, but that's when we need to come together in a spirit of love and empathy and support. And we learn a lot from people at the end of life and how they handle it and what we learn from it. And I know people who are in similar circumstances that have people that are suffering, but they'll at the same breath say, we're going to do everything we can to keep them here because I know that I will miss them for every day that I think I'm going to save myself the inconvenience or the suffering that they're going through. So, yeah, if these are important issues. You know, we don't dismiss the fact that people do suffer and suffer greatly, as John Paul II did when he was nearing the end of his life, who suffered greatly with Parkinson's and other debilitating illnesses. And if you watch the way he handled that to the end of his days, I think is sort of an example of what it's about. But it's a difficult issue, and there's no question about it. We don't judge anybody. We just are out there just
you have to stand by your faith.
Sticking by what we believe in and see how people feel. And that's where we are right now.
Right. If you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Chris Healy. And Chris is the executive director of the Connecticut Catholic Conference. Chris, it also, we were talking before the show, too, it also kind of lets insurance companies off the hook, right? You're talking about...
Well, one of the arguments we made was that and we didn't create this out of whole cloth. We just simply turned to where this assisted suicide has matured into public policy full throttle, which is in Canada. And in Canada last year, 10,000 people took their lives through assisted suicide. Many of those are promulgated on the fact that, as you know, in Canada, they have national health care.
Mm-hmm.
And in many cases, the national health care coverage would literally inform a patient who is seeking an additional form of care at an advanced age with several comorbidities was denied coverage because of the cost. So the option there is, well, you're on your own, or you can take the assisted suicide, and they literally provide that information, encourage that to people who, they, on one hand, they deny coverage. And this gets back to rationing and what's euphemistically called death panels. And the only people that tend to benefit from that, obviously, are, you know, certain insurance industries that don't want to pay costly premium, or excuse me, costly payments on based on premiums for people at the end of or at advanced ages who are, want certain procedures to prolong their life. That's how we pay for insurance. We pay for insurance, and we expect, if we make our premium payments and we file a claim and the claim is legitimate, that it gets paid. And so part of our argument was, you know, this is a, this is where we're going to be heading. And then the, for many, especially particularly those in a, in who are poor, who come from areas where they have very, they have state health care or Medicare, these are, this is where we're heading. You look at Medicare being bankrupt in 5 or 10 years, Medicaid being under watch. These are issues that reach ahead, and people start looking for options on how to cut costs. And what is the one thing they always say? Well, you know, we endure 90% of our costs for people at the end of life. End-of-life care, that's where all the money goes. You know, is that a real good use of our resources? You hear these things, they become very real. And I don't think that's a society we necessarily, from the Catholic perspective. And we as Catholic healthcare providers and providers of charity services, you know, we don't walk away from our responsibilities. So it, I think it's more than empowers us to have an opinion about that. So that's just one area that we explored.
So let's talk now, let's shift gears a little bit and talk about legalization of marijuana.
Well, it's a fact, you know, the church opposed legalization, as did almost every other faith group, religious in the state. We worked very hard to see if we could oppose it. Unfortunately, we are here now in a legalized state. It is simply for money. There's no practical benefit.
Right.
For it. The church supported decriminalization of possession of marijuana and other non, you know, lethal drugs. But like, so we didn't believe people should, you know, go to jail for 10 years for you know, low-level possession of marijuana. But here's where we are. We now see in schools the effects of legalized marijuana, children vaping in schools. I could say, tell you that from being a member of a local school board. Edibles are everywhere. They're purchased and distributed by older children and sold to younger children or given to younger children. We hear and smell marijuana everywhere in the public venue. It's affecting motor vehicle incidents, accidents in the workplace, lost time. And a lot of other things, including the effect marijuana has on people with severe mental illnesses, particularly younger people who may suffer from paranoia or schizophrenia, and you add to this. So there are a lot of bad side effects. Now that we've made it legal and acceptable, we're reaping kind of a whirlwind of the effect it has on society, particularly on younger people with, you know, their brain development and everything else under the sun. So we've made that legal.
Let me interrupt you a second.
Yeah.
It doesn't take much to do your research on what the impacts are going to have. You're right. Yeah. It was a money grab. It was a money grab by the governor and people up at the at the state. That's my opinion. Do your research. You know, get on an airplane, go to Denver, go to Colorado, where I'm from.
I have a friend who lives in Colorado outside of Denver. He says
it's ruined the state.
Denver is uninhabitable. In other words,
unbelievable.
Denver, he does not go there.
Nope.
He says it aside from just the general smell and the
poverty, the crime, everything.
It's a zombie land.
It is.
So knowing that
you've got real live case studies in other states, why in the hell, other than the money, that's the only motivation?
It's the money.
I can't believe it. I really can't believe it. But nobody's listening.
Well, in the same breath that they say, you know, this is fine, they're looking to expand ways about on drug treatment and drug education.
Isn't
while
it
they
funny?
Legalize it,
right?
You know, I mean, they'll say, "Well, we legalize alcohol." I said, "Well, that's true." And alcohol is, you know, also a drug, and as you and I both know, it is a killer.
Yep.
But alcohol leaves your system after 24 hours, unless you're really at it. And I know a little bit about it in my past life, and a little about that too. But marijuana has a lot of other problems that are not alcohol can only touch, And
it's a gateway drug.
And it's a gateway drug. And let's face it, between edibles and whatever, you can't detect it on children if they're eating it. You can tell if an 8-year-old's had alcohol in their breath. There's no way to really track it. And again, it gets back to what kind of society are we living in?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, are we a society that promotes clear thinking and sobriety and clearness of thought? No one's passing judgment on it. But I'm saying is when you try to pass laws, whatever they are, you say, what is the public good to come of this?
Money.
And legalizing marijuana had no public good other than money that just goes back into the big pot for politicians to spend on whatever, including drug prevention, which is just absurd.
It's hilarious. So they legalized marijuana. Now the television ad campaigns, the billboard campaigns.
Well, it's also, let's talk about gambling. I mean, it's the same thing. It's just the online gambling.
Right.
It's the same thing.
Now,
you know, when you and I were children and we knew like the uncle who liked to place the bet, you know, on the football game and had to go to a bookie and, you know, there was all that sort of undercover stuff and it was sort of tolerated as low-level graft until it got to a higher level. But, you know, society frowned on it. There were checks and balances. Mm-hmm. Now you have, you know, young people with phones and credit cards, gambling away idly all the time.
And it's okay.
It's a money grab.
Yep.
I'm not trying to sound like a prude. Believe me, I'm the last of that. I'm not judging. But once you let all these things loose, thinking that somehow by making them legal, you remove illegality, which is a farce. That's the first farce. It's just they want to get in on the action of the money.
Yes. Well, you know, and we've got a few minutes left here, Chris. I could talk to you forever. But, you know, and I think it goes back to, and you and I are on the same page on this, people don't have, or people need to get back to the foundation of having something that you believe in, whatever that is.
And this is what, let me just, absolutely, you know, there is something to be said. As the older you get, of course, you know, like me, my journey to connecting with God was based on desperation. I was a foxhole Catholic for a long time until my life needed to have the Holy Spirit invaded and save me. It did. I'm not proselytizing here. I'm not saying it's for everybody, but for me it worked. And part of that is every day I try to, as much as I play in a rough and tumble game, try to, you know, maintain a level of humility and virtue. I strive for virtue, and we don't teach and we don't compel people in our generation and below to say we need to promote virtue and goodness and honesty in everything we do. And if we do that, a lot of our problems can be solved. But if we take these shortcuts, if we take these, oh, I'm not going to judge, that's nonsense. Mm-hmm. You know, there has to be judgment in collectivism. We have to frown upon things that are harmful to children, harmful to society, harmful to the culture of this country. And we spend more time debasing and trying to confuse children on their gender. We try to confuse people about what's right and wrong. We know what's right and wrong. And people need to stand up and say that's wrong and that's right, and that there's no gray area, and stop this, you know, sort of nihilistic moral relativism that's destroying us.
Because as a country,
because nobody says, oh, it's not my place to judge.
Uh-huh.
Of course it is. Mm-hmm. We judge ourselves. We judge our children. We need to be accountable. We can't blame everything on the government or everything on the school system. You know, it all starts with people taking responsibility, trying to live a good life and to support those who are, and to hold people up that aren't leading that sort of life, and trying to emulate that rather than just try to tear them down or be cynical or to be dismissive of it or to make fun of it. And I think that's part of what we try to do at the conference, is say, look, we're people of faith. You know, we believe in life. We believe in charity. We believe in humility and virtue, and we want to promote that, whatever your religion is.
Mm-hmm.
But we also want to have we have a God-given and divine right that this country was created on to protect that religious freedom and practice. Because if we're doing that, then anything is possible and good things can happen.
And we've got to get back to that. We've got to get back to the basics. And as parents, we, you know, that's what I told my kids. You know, I'd take them kicking and screaming to church every Sunday. why do we have to do this? Why do we have to go to CCD? Why are you making us do this? Because I said it's my job as a parent to build a foundation of faith. That's what I signed up for. That's what I believe in. This is the foundation. What you build on that as you turn into adults, it depends on you. And I think more people need to really embrace that and go back and really think about it.
The important part, at least, and I'm just speaking for myself here because there are people that do it better than I do in my church, is that that ability to spend time with God and your faith calms you, it centers you, mm-hmm. it takes you away from your own selfish needs and interests. It says to you, it's the voice that you try to listen to every day, at least a couple of times a day, say, okay, what am I doing? Am I doing the right thing here? Are my motives the right motives? Am I being selfish? You know, that's what faith, that's what religion, whatever your religion allows you to do, it allows you to turn to something that's greater than yourself to guide you and, you know, to spend some part of your every day doing that. And you can't require people to do it. It has to come from within, but at the very least, we shouldn't have the state involved in trying to dismiss it, to take it out of our schools, to take it out of our communities, to belittle it or to secularize it. At their expense. You know, it's let us do our thing is our argument. Stop putting laws in that either abrogate it, restrict it, demean it, or, put a disadvantage to it.
Absolutely. Chris Healy, thank you so much for being here. Great conversation, and a lot of our listeners are actually either coming or going from church. How interesting is that?
Okay.
So thank you for
keep,
a great
Keep your eyes on the road.
Keep your eyes on the road. That's right. And, of course, thank you all for tuning in to this edition of News You Can Use right here on WTIC News Talk 1080.
Listeners, I want to tell you about a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore, where people tell interesting stories about their family history, and then we investigate the truth behind them. Family Lore is available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.